It's good to be at Blue Ridge. I think it's about exactly 4 years ago that we were here once on a Sunday morning. Since then, there's a number of faces here that have become more familiar. We see Monty and Carla frequently, and it's kind of a privilege to be here and see them at home. And bring you greetings from the Cornerstone Congregation in New York. You're all welcome there. We welcome company and we like it. Like is usually the case, I believe, when someone that you don't know very well or a committee from a church that you aren't familiar with, they come up with a title and give it an assignment. There's a lot of questions. What are they looking for? Where do they intend to go with this? And I didn't know a lot about your congregation. I tried to think if I knew of any maybe what we'd call handicapped people are here. I didn't know. I didn't know, and I didn't ask. I did ask Jimmy a little bit, and he didn't give me a lot of help. He said, "Well, it's." We didn't have a lot in particular. It's pretty wide open, just mind the spirit. And I mulled over this for several months, and when I sat down to study and to prepare, the Spirit took me to some different thoughts than I had. And I want to present some of them here, and hopefully you can be challenged and blessed as I was. A disability, Webster says, is a physical or mental condition that limits a person's movements, senses, or activities. And that's the first thought that came to my mind as I thought of a disability, a disabled person, someone with a condition that limits their, what we would call, normal life. Some of these disabilities are temporary. We've got a little taste of that at home in our congregation this spring. Last month, it was within less than a month, I maybe even within 2 weeks, I'm not exactly sure on all the dates, but we've had 3 broken bones in our congregation. One is a busy mom and 5 children and a greenhouse and produce patch to take care of, and she definitely didn't have time for a broken leg. Crutches weren't her idea of a way to spend the summer. And soon after that, I believe less than a week after that, a young father had an accident at work and broke his arm or his hand, his wrist here, and the doctors are telling him 8 weeks till you get that out of a cast. And he's a landscaper and the crunch is on, and this isn't his idea of a way to spend the summer when it's busy. He's disabled. And then a teenage girl broke her arm as well. And she's a very active girl, and a broken arm doesn't fit well in her program. And does God have possibilities in these experiences? Maybe it's easier for us to answer that than them. And some disabilities are from birth and are permanent, and there's no hope for a cure. And I thought of a man I visited with recently. He's in his 70s and he's farming, and last summer he had an accident on the farm, and since then he's had 3 surgeries and grueling hours of therapy. And he told me this week, it's about as good as it's going to get, and he's got very limited use of his arm. But he's still farming. He said he lifts his arm up like this, and then he can get a hold of the handle and pull himself up into the tractor, and we're getting along, and that's about what he's got to look forward to the rest of his life. That's about as good as they're going to get it. Possibilities? And then we could think of numerous ways of handicaps. And I tell the congregation at home sometimes some statements I make. I like to think I'm normal, and I don't like to feel too exposed, but there's some of these things maybe we can relate to. One of the statements I'd like to make, don't we too often, when we see a person with a disability, we rather see a disability with a person rather than a person with a disability? Can you relate to that? Do you know what I'm talking about? We tend to see a disabled person and we fail to think to their feelings and them as a person and what they're going through. And so the first part of the message, which I kind of doubt was in the primary focus of this topic, but I think it's a very important part of it. And that is, I'd like to think of turning others' disabilities into an opportunity and a possibility for us to bless them. Almost everyone, the first point I'd like to make that I think is very important, almost everyone, regardless of the level of their disability, still has the capacity to feel love and acceptance, self-worth, and they most definitely have the capacity to feel the opposite. They know. They can feel. And that gives each of us a solemn responsibility to relate to them with love and compassion and to put special effort into showing them acceptance and self-worth. We need to show Christ's love to others, especially those who may struggle with feeling unwanted and not worth much. Just think of how many individuals Jesus and his disciples encountered through Jesus' ministry who would fit in this category of disabled, and Jesus took time for them. And we have that, turn to John 9. We have numerous of these accounts recorded. Doesn't matter how busy Jesus was, he had time to touch the lives of the needy around him. This story is very familiar. We could probably almost quote what Jesus said here, but I think it's important and we'd like to read it. John 9, verse 1. And as Jesus passed by, he saw a man which was blind from his birth. And his disciples asked him, saying, Master, who did sin, this man or his parents, that he was born blind? Jesus answered, Neither hath this man sinned, nor his parents, but that the works of God should be made manifest in him. And I've known that verse by memory. But do I really believe that? Is that how my life is lived? Do I believe like Jesus that this man is worth stopping and taking time for, and he healed him? But I think it's important that Jesus took the time that day to dismantle faulty thinking. Faulty thinking that God uses disabilities to punish sin. Sometimes, oftentimes, disabilities are a result and a consequence of either sin. We can think of that in our world today. Millions are suffering because their parents abuse substance and their children suffer for it. Many times, disabilities are a result of carelessness. Many times. But let's believe what Jesus said. And since none of us is God, let's not try to assign God's purpose to a disability. Let's not label these people. Let's not try to even go there. We're not God. We shouldn't try to assign a purpose. And a question came to me, and maybe a little closer home than we like to admit. But are we ever tempted to think like these disciples and label this as sin in order to somehow lessen our personal responsibility and to somehow maybe justify our lack of compassion for these kind of people? I challenge you with that. But in each situation where there are disabilities, there are many possibilities for the works of God to be manifest. Many times, the works of God are manifest in the life of a disabled person And maybe that disabled person has a testimony like that song we sang. Thank you for that song. And we are challenged by their response and their acceptance of God's plan for their life. And we see the works of God manifest that way. Many, many times, the works of God are manifest in the lives and the devotion and the compassion of the caregivers in many situations. And we're challenged and we're touched. And if you're a caregiver, or if God ever calls you to be a caregiver, God bless you. It's an important work. And remember that the works of God are manifest through the hands of caregivers. And be not weary in well-doing. Many times, the works of God are manifest through those who are not as closely involved, but those who love and accept and just are a blessing to the disabled. My mind went this afternoon to the church in Western Ontario where my wife grew up and where we got married. And there was a little baby there who had a high fever and as a result went stone deaf. And when I first learned to know the people in the congregation there, he was a schoolboy. And I was impressed with the way the whole congregation rallied around and supported and made this boy have as normal a life as possible. And it blessed me. Particularly his father. He gave a lot to see that this boy could grow up to be a productive young man, a productive man. And all the children in that school learned sign language, and they could all communicate with him very well. And it wasn't without its tough times. But this man is today my brother-in-law. He's a father of three children, and he's a blessing. Not many years after, I can't remember, I should have maybe asked my wife, but I didn't. But I was thinking of it this afternoon. I think just a few years younger than him. This was a small congregation, and just a few years younger than him was a girl born, cerebral palsy, I believe it was, severely handicapped. She couldn't care for herself at all. And over that congregation, the service they were to the family and particularly one girl there, as a small girl going through school, she befriended Kenita and was such a blessing to see them. She wheeled her chair after church and she just stuck with her through her teenage years and just was a friend to a girl who couldn't really communicate and who couldn't really reciprocate. She could somewhat. And her dad told me once that he is just so blessed to be part of a congregation that fills the needs so well, financially and other ways, many, many ways. The works of God are manifest in that situation. She passed away here recently, within the last couple years. But God called her dad to be the deacon there. And I believe these experiences were part of God's work in his life. That's his testimony. I came across a quote. I should have written it down. I believe the credit goes to one of the top leaders, maybe in the Lutheran church. But the quote says, "Persons with disabilities are an integral part of the fabric of life." And I believe that. And I ask you a question. Imagine with me a bit, if you could take an eraser to the Gospels and you could erase every account, everything that's written in there, everything that we know about our Lord Jesus that had anything to do with someone we would count as disabled or that would fit this definition from Webster, who had a physical or mental condition that limits their movements, senses, or activities. Erase all of that out of the Gospel. A lot is missing. a lot of the character of our Lord Jesus we wouldn't know about. Take that same eraser in your mind and erase every experience that you've had since you were a toddler relating to persons with handicaps and disabilities, and erase them and think with me how imbalanced we would be. We gain a lot by learning to and accepting and loving those who are disabled and who God has called to that lot in life. What all would be missing from our societies and our churches if none of these experiences would be part of them? And so I repeat, persons with disabilities are an integral part of the fabric of life. Let's follow the example of David. Let's give the Mephibosheths among us acceptance. Let's give them a place. Let's love them. Let's show the compassion of Jesus Christ. Include them and find as many possibilities as we can to bless them. Our lives and theirs will both find fulfillment in that. Now I'd like to go to the part of the message that my mind first of all went to when I was given this assignment. And as I looked at the dictionary definition of disabilities, on down about two or three definitions, there was several definitions, and I came across this. Webster says, a disability is a disqualification, a restriction, or disadvantage. Anyone here face disadvantages in your life? Are there things that disqualify you from things you'd like to do? Are you disabled in that way? And possibilities, I looked up the definition, and it says, when used in the plural form, it usually refers to potential or prospective value. And so maybe this part of the message, I would just make a subtitle that says, disadvantages, turning disadvantages into potential, or recognizing potential in disadvantages and restrictions that we face. So we think of disadvantages, we all face what we call disadvantages in our lives. Some of them are out of our control. Some of them are self-imposed. Some of them are circumstances, simply circumstances that we can't change. Some of them are the result of things that others have done and we pay the price, or we look at it that way. Some are perceived, some are actual disadvantages. There are many, many circumstances and situations that feel like a disability to us. Or at least I feel that way sometimes. They're a restriction, they're a disadvantage, they're just, it's holding us back from what we feel we should do. And so I tried to think of some Bible examples that we could think about that may help us in relating to this. And I think I have 5 points. All of these we could read lengthy portions of the story, but we don't have time. So I'm going to count on your Bible knowledge, and we're not going to look at the whole story in any of these. But first of all, I'd like to think of Joseph. Joseph faced what is often on the top of our list of disadvantages: mistreatment by others and hateful treatment. And we often feel like this is a thing that holds us back. It's the way others treat us and accept us or don't accept us. And Joseph felt this stronger and more than any of us here have, I believe. His own brothers mistreated him, sold him into Egypt. There were years and years of separation from his family. He had every reason to believe he'd never see his father alive again, and he loved his father. His father loved him. But this seemed to be a curse that just followed him right into Egypt, and next thing he's not there that awful long, and he's put into jail for the sin of another and forgotten there. This is a disadvantage. This is the kind of thing that can turn into a serious disability in our lives. Depends how we relate to the mistreatment of others. Imagine with me that Joseph would come in the doors and we'd have an opportunity to shake his hand after the service here, and he'd start to relate to us the things he faced through his life, how his brothers treated him, how his life turned out down there in Egypt. And I wouldn't be shocked to find a bitter old man, one that's scarred and one that's struggled through life and one that's allowed the extreme mistreatment of his youth to cripple his ability to have meaningful relationships with others. Because of his past, he has frequent flare-ups in interpersonal relationships and has a lot of problems. And he's one of those that has a list of just about everywhere he's been, and whoever he's met up with, they've been out to get him. And he's pretty bitter. As we get to know him more, we see more and more how deep these scars have gone into his life. And basically the only people he really gets along with are others who are hurting, and they just kind of feed each other these things, and they just grow more and more bitter. We shake our heads and we feel sorry for Joseph, but we can't blame him. That seems to be the mentality some of us we're tempted to take in situations like this. After all, what chance did the poor man have? And similar to a crippling disease that curls up one limb at a time and just makes us totally useless physically, bitterness over what happened in the past is a disability that will cripple us and render us useless in the kingdom of God. Turn to Genesis chapter 50. Genesis chapter 50, I'd like to read just a few verses here, a quote of Joseph. Quite the opposite of the imaginary story we just thought of here. We know these words. Let's start at verse 19. Genesis 50, verse 19. And Joseph said unto his brothers, "Fear not, for I am in the place of God. But as for you, ye thought evil against me, but God meant it unto good, to bring to pass as it is this day, to save much people alive. Now therefore fear ye not. I will nourish you and your little ones." And he comforted them and spake kindly unto them. This verse 20 really stood out to me again. And I asked this question: is God's list of disadvantages totally different than your list of disadvantages? Are the very things that the devil would like to turn into a disability, into something that's going to cripple you and make you curl up and grow useless, God meant it for good? That's what Joseph told his brothers. This is kind of easy for us to read. We didn't live through all those years that Joseph lived through. And I believe Joseph was a normal person like every one of us here. He had feelings, and he had to deal with this more than once, more than twice. And we read the story of Joseph, and all along God had so many possibilities. God had so much potential for him in his life to do good, right through the worst of the circumstances, right through the things that would have, we would say, almost he would have had a right to be bitter about. And so it all depends on our perspective. How we choose to relate to disadvantages of what we're facing, things that are the way people treat us, things that that's not our fault, we say, but really, am I a victim of circumstances, or is God meaning it for good? And the difference between disability, allowing that to disable me, and me finding potential has to do with my perspective and my faith in God. Thought of another man, Gideon. Turn to the book of Judges, chapter 6. Most of us can relate to this account a bit with Gideon, where God called Gideon out of his comfort zone. And Gideon had some legitimate things to say, didn't he? Let's read Judges chapter 6, verse 14. And the Lord looked upon him and said, "Go in this thy might, and thou shalt save Israel from the hand of the Midianites. Have not I sent thee?" And he said unto him, Gideon said, "O my Lord, wherewithal shall I save Israel? Behold, my family is poor in Manasseh, and I am the least in my father's house." Can anyone relate to that? Have you looked around at others and said, "I'm the least qualified, Lord. You've got the wrong man"? No, surely not. "Look at all my disadvantages. Nobody will listen to me. Nobody wants me to step up and do what you're asking me to do." And then there's Moses. It'd be interesting. I took the time and I read, and do it sometime again, Exodus 3 and 4, where God called him there at the burning bush, and Moses came up with logical reasoning one after the other. "Lord, it can't be me. It's not going to work. Surely not, Lord." To the point where the Lord was angry with Moses. And if we're going to look around and compare ourselves with others and allow those things to become and to focus on those disadvantages, if you will, they will disable us. They will hinder our usefulness. They will make us unproductive in God's kingdom. God will enable those he calls. Can we in faith take the Lord's words here? Let's read verse 16. "And the Lord said unto Gideon, Surely I will be with thee, and thou shalt smite the Midianites as one man." God will enable us to what we're called to do. Let's accept God's call. Moses did. The Lord used him. Gideon did. The Lord used him. And thousands of men of God since have accepted the call out of their comfort zone, and God has used them. Third one I have here is also on Moses. And that is, Moses tried to do what God called him to do back there in Egypt before the previous incident we just talked about. And he slew that Egyptian. And his loyalty and zeal for the people of God backfired on him, blew up in his face. And he had to leave and go out to the desert and spend all those years useless. He tried and he failed. And now God's calling him to go right back where he messed up and pick up. Can anybody relate to that? Satan is such a master at taking the disadvantages of what we've done wrong in the past and where we've failed and holding them in our face and disabling us. And to render us useless if we'll follow his suggestions. We studied Paul a couple weeks ago there in the Sunday school lesson. You can turn to Acts chapter 9. And I don't recall that we read about this anywhere where Paul struggled with this. But Paul was normal. And everybody else in his time there, during who he related to, were normal too. And I believe that Satan and likely other people often threw Paul's past in his face. Satan is such an expert at doing that. He is such an expert at crippling people with accusations of things that are forgiven. Acts chapter 9, verse 15. In the verses before this, God called a man named Ananias and he said, go see Saul, he's praying. And Ananias said, "Lord, I've heard of this man. I know who this is. And I know how much evil he's done, and I know the authority he has. Lord, are you sure?" And let's read verse 15, Acts 9, 15. "But the Lord said unto Ananias, Go thy way, for he is a chosen vessel unto me, to bear my name before the Gentiles and kings and the children of Israel, for I will show him how great things he must suffer for my name's sake." Paul's brutal persecution of the church didn't change the fact that after he answered God's call, he's a chosen vessel unto me. And every one of us here needs to claim that. regardless of what we've got in our past, regardless of what Satan and others are able to bring up in our face, we need to cling to this. After we've been forgiven, God forgave us, and we are a chosen vessel, and there's endless possibilities of what God has done with redeemed sinners. Let's never let Satan cripple us by those accusations. The fourth one I have here is Esther. Think of the circumstances in Esther's life. They were out of control. Could God possibly be in control in this situation? Put yourself in her shoes, and Mordecai and Esther there. Life was so unfair, and what could possibly be the purpose of this? What good could come out of her life in this situation? She was just trapped in an impossible situation. And Haman had things sewed up, and things were going from bad to worse. And he had the upper hand. And then we have this loaded thought from Mordecai. Who knoweth whether thou art come to the kingdom for such a time as this? In spite of the circumstances that were so unfairly stacked against them, Mordecai and Esther chose to believe in God and to make the best of their situation. And we know the story. We have the benefit of knowing the outcome. They didn't. Where they were, they had two options. They could throw up their hands and just bemoan the terrible state of affairs, and there's nothing we can do. Or they could believe and act upon the belief that God's in control and that God has a purpose. And we'll follow that, and we'll let the rest to God. When we choose faith, when we're up against, when things are totally out of control and we're in impossible situations and we choose to believe God, the possibilities are endless. When we throw up our hands and just bemoan it and just focus on the sad state of affairs, our disadvantages are again allowed to disable us, and our usefulness is hindered. It's our choice to accept or despair when circumstances seem against us. You can turn to 2 Corinthians chapter 7. The fifth one I'd like to look at is the Apostle Paul again, later in his life. 2 Corinthians chapter 12. Let's read chapter 12 and starting at verse 7. Paul says, "And lest I should be exalted above measure through the abundance of the revelations, there was given to me a thorn in the flesh, the messenger of Satan to buffet me, lest I should be exalted above measure. For this thing I besought the Lord thrice, that it might depart from me. And he said unto me, My grace is sufficient for thee, for my strength is made perfect in weakness. Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities, that the power of Christ may rest upon me. Therefore, I take pleasure in infirmities, in reproaches, in necessities, in persecutions, in distresses for Christ's sake. For when I am weak, then am I strong." Paul's thorn in the flesh. Why doesn't the Bible give us details? Why doesn't the Bible tell us? Why didn't somebody, Paul or somebody else, write exactly what this is? I did a bit of study, and I found that there is a wide range of commentators' ideas on what this could have been. Some ideas are downright ludicrous to me. I don't believe it. Some suggested even a besetting sin in his life that he couldn't get victory over, and I refuse that. That's not what the Bible tells us. But we don't know. There's only speculation. And I'd like to suggest that's for a purpose. I'd like to suggest that we don't know what Paul's thorn in the flesh, what he dealt with, what he asked God to remove, so that we can take whatever we're facing and put it in there and apply it. I don't know. I don't know anyone's thorn in the flesh here, but I'm fairly certain that we're a normal group and we can fill in the blank. Why? Why did God give Paul a thorn in the flesh? One of the things he tells us here in verse 7 is, lest he be exalted. Or maybe, not maybe. God gives us difficult circumstances, difficult things to face in life to help us be able to relate to others in a better way. I believe he does. When we face whatever it is, that helps us to have more compassion on others. If I face no difficulties and I just breeze through life and nothing ever went wrong, I believe I'd be the most incompassionate, hard man there was. And so God does us a favor when he brings these experiences into our lives. This was also a huge potential, and it has for thousands of years put God's grace on display. Paul's testimony has. He said, "My grace is sufficient for thee." And it was where Paul could experience the strength of Christ. When I'm weak, when I'm at the end of myself, then am I strong. And it's the same for us. It's pretty easy to read over verse 9 and 10 here, but there's some heavy words here. "Most gladly, therefore, will I rather glory in my infirmities." What are infirmities? Strong says it's the frailty of the body and the weakness and sickness. It's physical problems. And we're going to glory in them? I have a problem with that, I admit. I don't like to be held back by physical infirmities. He lists more things. Verse 10, "I take pleasure in reproaches, insults, and hurts." Again, from Strong's. I'm not going to ask for a raise of hands. Who's mastered that? You take pleasure in insults and hurts from others? "In necessities, the distressing needs of necessity, needs that aren't met. Persecutions, suffering that's inflicted by others, hostility." I take pleasure in these things. I glory in these things, Paul said. "In distresses, calamity, and anguish." When we accept the disadvantages, the thorns in the flesh that God designs in our lives, we have two choices. We can either rebel and chafe and just allow it to turn us bitter, or we can do like Paul and we can put the grace of God on display and we can accept it. And it doesn't matter whether our brothers sold us to Egypt or not. We can accept it and we can say God meant it for good. It doesn't matter if God calls us to something way out of our comfort zone and our qualifications and our abilities. If we accept it and move on, the possibilities are there. It doesn't matter if we've failed miserably in the past. It doesn't matter if we've sinned and fell short, and our brethren have forgiven us and God forgave us. We can get up and we can be a chosen vessel to the Lord if we accept it. And when we find ourselves trapped in impossible circumstances and nothing is, we're between a rock and a hard place, there's nowhere to go, we can accept it or we can fight against it. Whatever the situation, we have the potential to experience not only the sufficient grace of God, but the limitless strength of Christ, like Paul says. When we can glory in infirmities because of the strength of Christ, there's huge potential. Paul said in Philippians, "I can do all things through Christ which strengtheneth me." And he knew what he was talking about, didn't he? And we can claim that. Everyone here can experience that. Is it too strong to make a statement that says to the child of God, to a person living his life in faith and acceptance of God's plan, that there are no disadvantages, but there are only opportunities and possibilities that the works of God be made manifest? The possibilities and the potential in these situations are not only things that we'll experience ourselves, we'll experience, but many others, there's the potential of blessing many others. I talked about the old farmer I visited with that's got to put his hand up and pull himself into the tractor, and I've talked to him numerous times since his accident. One time he was sounding a bit downhearted, but it didn't last long. Most of the time he's upbeat and he's accepting it. And through this experience, I've learned to know him better. And I learned that he's farming at 72 years old or whatever he is, not because he needs money, but he has a son with some disabilities. And there's no way this son could take over the farm, he told me. But he loves it, and he does such a good job as long as dad's there to help him along. And he said, I'm going to do it as long as I can for my son. Do you see how I was blessed? By him not only accepting his disability, but the way he's blessing his son and his disability, I was blessed. And his testimony is just a testimony of the grace of God and the strength of Christ in his life. And I could tell you many more things about him that just backs this up in my mind. But I say the potential for blessing others is limitless as well. It's not our focus, but it's a real part of the possibilities. Whatever God calls you to, I don't know what you're facing now. None of us knows. Some of these things happen so fast, in the blink of an eye, and normal life as we know it is forever changed. But in all the things that God brings into our lives, he has a purpose. And we can in faith accept it and realize the potential that he has for our lives, or we can fight against him and become disabled by Satan in usefulness in the kingdom. I can do all things through Christ, which strengtheneth me. Let's kneel for prayer.